100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the sweet day off and 19 no long, so me say.
Hey, 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 Digital Sista is back with you. Thank you for continuing to help the podcast grow. I love my big fan base in Denver. Thank you very much. And, of course, around the world. Just thank you for passing the podcast around and continuing to tune in. I really, really, really appreciate it. Wow, can you believe it's been 10 years since we lost Tupac? He was gunned down September 13th, 1996 in Vegas, and he was in the car with Suge Knight. Oh, you know, it's so sad because I remember Tupac. Remember when he was with the group Digital Underground? I can't remember the lead singer's name, but he used to wear the Groucho Marx nose with the glasses and the bushy mustache, and he wear this fur hat with a sales tag hanging off of it. But their jams, their songs really jam. Remember that song, All Around the World, do-do-do-do-do, you know, just like that. And then you saw a young Tupac, who was just really kind of part of the chorus, you know, just kind of in the background. And then, you know, that was really the beginning of the gangster rap that was coming out of the West Coast. And then Tupac started coming on to the gangster scene. And it was really after Suge Knight bailed him out of one of his little incidents and, you know, signed him to Death Row Records. And unfortunately, I think, you know, Tupac was a very complex man. You know, he was the precursor for what we see today. He was making movies. He was branching out and making different types of movies, which was good. Remember Poetic Justice and some other movies like that? So what we see today in some of the rappers are, I want to say, kind of like descendants of Tupac's character and his music. I mean, look at 50 Cent, or 50 as he is known. He has very vicious raps, bullet-ridden body, and that is kind of similar to how Tupac's reckless style was. We have Eminem, who has all these tortured lyrics that kind of reflects, you know, Tupac's dark side. And we have a remnant of Jay-Z, because Jay-Z puts out a lot of music, just as Tupac left a tremendous volume of music, so much so that some people still don't think he's dead, you know, kind of like Elvis. They think he's still around, living somewhere, cutting out music and putting out music. But he was very complex because, you know, he was handsome. He was very charismatic. He was a character that kind of embodied gangster rap and hip-hop at that time. He was a violent felon. He was a brilliant songwriter. He was a reckless celebrity. He was a misogynist. He was a visionary. But he was just so complex. And I think, unfortunately, you know, at 25 and being killed at 25, he didn't get to really mature. And I think that is what is so sad. And that's what's so sad about so many of our rappers who have left us, you know, way before they were supposed to, especially through a violent death. And you're left wondering with him, you know, what could have been with Tupac? What other things might he have done? Might he have reunited with Digital Underground? You just are left wondering what could have been. Would he be somebody who'd be working with 50 Cent right now or some of the other rappers? You know, would he be producing movies? You're just left wondering what could have been. And that's really the sad part when so many of the rappers are murdered, you know, before their time, before they had a chance to live out their lives. You know, like with Proof, who was Eminem's best friend in Detroit, and, you know, so many other rappers that I've talked about in past podcasts, that, you know, were murdered or experienced, being shot or whatever. But, it's just sad that he's not around, but in many ways he still is because his music still comes out. But you just kind of wonder what could have been with him. And you kind of wonder if he would have, kind of moved away from the gangster style as the gangster rap sort of changed and the southern rap has taken over. You just kind of wonder what might have been. And that's the sad part about him not being with us. But I can't believe it's 10 years, it's just thoroughly amazing. But we miss him, and we hope that that people in the industry will look at this, and as I said in so many of my previous podcasts, will take a look at this and say, hey, maybe some of the violence has to stop. But we miss you, Tupac, and we wish you were still with us putting out this great music. But, rest in peace. Definitely rest in peace. And I did read something kind of recently that his mom, Afeni Shakur, who, used to be a Black Panther, but she's really turned her life around, and she's got a really wonderful performing arts center kind of in Georgia, in the outskirts of Georgia. And apparently, she was supposed to take Tupac's ashes to South Africa to, sprinkle them in a particular location, but apparently that seems to have fallen through. I don't know exactly why, but I could only guess. It probably would be very difficult to carry that out because as long as his mom has his ashes, she still really has a part of him with her. But if she sprinkles those ashes, someplace far away like South Africa, there's really nothing left for her to have of him per se. So I would imagine that's probably a very difficult thing for her to do, even 10 years after his death. So I would say to Afeni, take your time, and even if that's something you don't feel you can do right now, then don't do it. Just keep his ashes with you, and if you never feel like that's something you can do, that's okay. Just talk to him and let him know that, you just want to keep at least a piece of him close by with you. But anyway, we miss Tupac, and his legacy still lives on. Oh, now let's talk about Bobby and Whitney. I mean, 14 years of marriage. Are we really surprised? Because I remember when they got married, like everybody else, I just thought, oh my God. How could she do this? How could she marry him? But as it turns out, we've seen, being Bobby Brown, and we've seen some of the behaviors with her. She was a street girl from way back when, but they just polished up her image and made her into this little fairy tale princess that, everybody bought into. But, Whitney was a street girl from way back, at the clubs, hanging out, getting into fights, all that kind of stuff. So she was no angel from the very beginning. But it was just interesting, that she married him. And, they had a rocky marriage, and, of course, the drug addiction and the issues with that. And what we saw really were two people who I think believed in their own hype, and probably were very codependent in many ways, and they really kind of self-destructed with each other. And then you kind of saw that Whitney's was sinking deeper into her thing, and it seemed like Bobby was trying to get out and kind of revive his career, but he didn't do such a good job, on the Tom Joyner cruise, because they booed him off the stage and all that because he was acting a fool. But in any event, it seemed like he was trying to come back, and Whitney was still doing her thing. And what it seems to be like now is that she really, I guess, was really struggling with trying to, get her life back together. And she finally got the strength, and apparently she's in California. in a rehab facility, you know, with family and friends and the paparazzi being kept at bay so she can get herself together. And she seems to finally have the strength to make the change in her marriage and file for the legal separation. Because in California law, you have to be separated for 6 months and then you can file for divorce. So anyway, she's doing those steps so that she can end the marriage. And it would seem that he's taken up with this, what's her name? Corinne Steffens, who used to be known as, you know, Superhead Video Vixen. He's taken up with her. Is staying at her Beverly Hills home, and Whitney's out, you know, in rehab getting herself together. And it'll just be interesting to see if she can pull it back together, because, you know, she has the support. You know, she's got Clive Davis, that's her mentor, and he seems to have stood by her, and, you know, of course, her family. So hopefully, you know, she will get her life back the way she wants it, and hopefully her voice hasn't been too destroyed, you know, from the things that she was doing. And, you know, we just hope that she can get well and get back her life the way she wants it. It may not be quite the same as, you know, the heady days of her success in the late 80s and early 90s, but, you know, she can still come back, and she's got that voice. And, you know, I think if she takes her time and does the right material, she probably can come back okay. And if she can, you know, get herself really back together, who's to say that she couldn't, you know, go back on tour and kind of build her career up again, even though, you know, much like Tina Turner did some 20-something years ago, not the same circumstance, because, you know, Tina wasn't strung out, but she was, you know, in just as bad a situation, you know, with Ike. But, you know, she decided that her name was all she needed, and she had the strength eventually to leave, and it took her, you know, some time to get her career back. But man, we're so glad Tina's back, you know, in a big way. And I think really Whitney can probably do much of the same thing, but the other difference will be too is we think for the most part we know Tina to be very gracious, and that's probably going to be different for Whitney, because we know Whitney has a little bit of a different personality, a little bit more feisty, and she's, you know, younger, of course. So I think it's going to make a difference for her whether or not she can also work on those demons and the personality, and maybe just get back to being, you know, Whitney Houston, the singer, and lose all of the hype and lose all the attitude and just lose all of that contributed to you not staying on your career the way that we would have loved you to. So hopefully I wish her good luck and Godspeed. I hope she gets well, and we just look forward to her coming back and putting out great music again, and perhaps making some movies and going out on a tour. So we are looking forward to you, Whitney, coming back and being healthy and being strong and putting out good music. And to Bobby, you know, I hope that you can find what you need and, you know, put out music the way you want to, too, and get back to what you want to do. And that's, you know, that's all that we can hope for them. But Whitney, get well, and we can't wait for you to come back. We miss you too. Now, check this out. This is something I'd never heard of before, but apparently there's this Brothers to Brazil connection where a lot of brothers are going down to Brazil for these sex vacations. Because they claim that, you know, they're running from the oppressive, you know, white society in the United States, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I had never heard of this before. Now, I had heard of the sex vacations that a lot of the males take going to Thailand, and places like that. But I had never heard of that they were going down to Brazil. But you know, hey, I've seen Brazil. I want to go to Brazil. I've seen the people in Brazil. They're beautiful. They're absolutely beautiful. But apparently, they're going down there and they can, stay for a week and have this live-in person who will cook and clean, of course, and have sex with them and all that, for a particular price. And they're getting it, pretty on the cheap because, for the most part, unless this Brazilian woman is a high-class call girl, she's going to be, just your average type of person who probably, for the most part, is living a fairly impoverished life until, the rich Americans come down. So I just thought, man, that's very interesting. I never heard of that before. And we have to look at that, why they're doing it and why. Most importantly, why? Because on one hand, they're saying they're trying to escape the oppression and all of that, but then you're going to a country and you're perpetuating that same image with, quote, your sisters. You're not doing anything to set them up and perhaps get them to be financially independent in another way than being, a hooker, a prostitute, call girl, whatever you want to call it. So they're not really doing anything to uplift these women and to set them on a path where they don't have to turn tricks, to survive. And so, you have to look at that and really what the motive is. So the motive is you really just want to go someplace, get your freak on, cheaply, have someone cater to you, and that's it. You don't want anything more than that, and that's okay. But let's look at how you're subjugating your sisters. Okay, you're running from one place, but you're doing the same thing that you claim other groups have done to you. So, it's an interesting situation, and people will justify whatever they want to justify to have a good time. But I just thought that was interesting that, the sex trade is alive and well, even in Brazil, with the diaspora of women of color. Very interesting, very interesting. So if you have somebody and they're suddenly wanting to go down to Rio, you may want to check it out and see what they're really going down there for. Just a heads up. Whoa, now what was the Pope thinking? I mean, come on. Didn't we just have a few months ago the whole incident with the Danish paper of making fun of the Prophet Muhammad and all hell broke out? I mean, they're blowing up the Danish embassy. We saw the images of people running with their drawers out of the embassy because of, what was going on. And, we have to talk about this whole thing with the Western arrogance. I've said this in previous podcasts too. And I think, world leaders have to do a better job of choosing their words carefully and thinking about what they're saying. And I hate to tell the Pope, but even though he repeated the words, and he was quoting from Manuel II, Palaeologus, I think I said that correctly. He was the 14th century Roman emperor of Byzantium who had a running debate with a Persian scholar about whether violence in the name of God could be defended or deemed righteous. Now, even though this was something he quoted from a 14th century reading, the context was it was taken out of context, and people didn't really care if this is what he was quoting, some 14th century emperor. They're looking at what he said today and what's going on today. And the fact that he even said that would make people wonder how he really feels. And so what has happened? All sorts of hell has broken out. They've had to tighten security at the Vatican. He initially came out with, it wasn't quite an apology, but he was kind of explaining himself. And then that didn't go over too well. Then he had, I guess his PR people from the Vatican on various news shows, of course, they were trying to explain, what he meant, and that wasn't going over too well. And so finally, I think on Sunday, he had to come out in his during his regular Sunday message to his followers in Vatican Square, to really come out and apologize and try to clean it up by saying, you know, these were not really things that he felt, and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, you have to look at that whole issue of context. We, right now, the world is just a tinderbox. If you happen to tune into my show, Global Talk Radio, I had Dr. Gwendolyn Goldsby Grant on just about a little over a half hour ago talking about the psychology of trauma and the fact that we have to, you know, think about what we're saying, because the world is a tinderbox right now. It doesn't take much to set people off. We're all traumatized by all of the horrible events that have gone on over the last year or so, and everybody's walking on eggshells. And I think, you know, I have no, I have respect, you know, for the Pope and his position, but I think we have to be a little bit more, I would say a little bit less arrogant, and be more thoughtful about the things we're saying because of the nature of the times that we are in right now. It doesn't take much to inflame certain populations, and they are already on edge, and so they're just looking for more and more things to justify their feelings. And we've heard from, I don't want to get that wrong, but we've heard from one of the Muslim clerics who basically has said that it's a holy war and that they're going to do everything. Well, they feel that the West is trying to eradicate Islam. And then Islam, on the other hand, is going to do everything in its power to protect itself. And so there's a problem. You know, we're a tinderbox right now. We can't, unfortunately, that's the nature of what's going on right now, that people can't have meaningful conversation and discourse without people, you know, just going hog wild and taking it to the extreme. And unfortunately, I think that's just the result of what has happened since the invasion of Iraq. You know, you can justify it however you want to justify it, but it still doesn't make it right. And so I think our world leaders have to do a better job at thinking about what they say and remove that level of arrogance from that, and you know, just realize anything you say can set the world on fire. And I think he was very naive, the Pope, in thinking that he was going to have this intellect, because he's known as being, you know, very intellectual, but he thought he was going to have this intellectual discourse about, you know, this 14th century a scholar, and I'll just put that out there and we'll put that out for discussion. He was very naive and very surprised at the reaction from his words. And I think that speaks to the fact that there's that arrogance, no matter if you're president of a country or if you're head of a particular religion and Western religion. So I think, you know, we got to watch what we say and be more careful, because as I read in one of the articles, context is a bitch, okay? People aren't going to sit around and wonder, oh, he said this at a lecture at a German university. No, all they hear is that you said something negative about their religion, and that's what they are up in arms about. So I think he's going to be doing a mea culpa for quite a while, and I think he probably woke up and realized that he just can't, you know, make these comments and think that it's going to be okay. It's a different time right now. It's a different situation right now. And I think, you know, they're just going to have to be more aware of that. Oh, let's talk about some nonprofit activity right now. I think that would be interesting. Oh, check this out. Google has broken with tradition and has set up a for-profit philanthropy, google.org. They were initially going to give $1 billion to tackle poverty, disease, and global warming, but they've decided to change their structure a little bit, and they're going to start paying some taxes, and that's going to allow them to be a little bit more flexible in how they can move their money around, and it's going to let them fund some startup companies and form partnerships with venture capitalists, and they will even be able to lobby Congress. So that's going to be something very interesting to watch and see if other organizations follow suit. I have a feeling they will, because Google has that kind of following. They're a very innovative company. Let's look at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation. They're going to donate, $100 million from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and $50 million from the Rockefeller Foundation to fund a program in Africa that aims to increase access to seeds that produce higher crop yields. It's a program that was called Green Revolution that the Rockefeller Foundation launched in the 1940s in Latin America and Southeast Asia, which is pretty interesting. But I wonder with that, could they not come up with something that would, I know that they do a lot with microloans, but could they not do something that would teach people something more entrepreneurial? Yes, the seeds are great in the farming, but it seems to me that maybe there could be something more that maybe the foundations can do to help make the people more financially independent and stable. But, there's so many issues there and things like that, but hopefully they will look at doing something like that. The agricultural end is great, but maybe there could be some other programs that they could look at too. I see that George Soros, he's a big philanthropist who's donated lots of money to political things fostering democracy, but he also has announced a $50 million donation to support a program to help African villages escape poverty through a wide variety of efforts, boosting crop yields, supporting literacy in classrooms and health clinics. So I like what he's doing, because I think that's going to really help people more directly. And what if you're somebody who doesn't have a farm, you could be someone who is just living but doesn't have land. So I think his grant will help those people who aren't necessarily farmers but who could benefit from what his program could do. There's also a new charity called the United States Artists, which is going to provide a $50,000 unrestricted grant to each of 50 artists chosen from an application pool of 300 nominees. That's going to be very interesting. The applicants have been nominated by 150 anonymous American art leaders and will be judged by a panel of artists, critics, and scholars. So all of you creative people and artists out there, you may want to find out more information about the new charity, United States Artists. Let's look at, remember the big money that Warren Buffett gave? Well, apparently he gave a lot of that in the form of stock, and that's a very interesting way to make a charitable donation. So check that out too, because if you have big bucks, that might be the route that you would want to go. It seems that the IRS has decided that the NAACP did not violate its tax-exempt status, which prohibits political campaigning. You may remember they got into a little trouble when then-chairman Julian Bond gave a speech in July 2004 criticizing President Bush, and that opened up the floodgate for the IRS to start digging into the NAACP. But apparently that worked out okay. And I just read that there was another incident. I'm going to find out more information, but it's a church. Can't remember what state, but it's a church who was, a pastor who was telling his congregation, not telling them how to vote, but that he was presenting his opinion about President Bush and, the policies and things like that. And so now the IRS is looking into their tax status and delving into their business. And so the unfortunate thing that we have in this atmosphere tonight, today is the paranoia, the fact that you can't have an opinion, and the fact that you are speaking out against something, creates a situation that you're, you know, taxes and status may be jeopardized. And that really, I think, is unfortunate that we have some thin-skinned leaders who are not willing to be open up to conflicting opinion. So, again, I go back to that issue of how we are a traumatized nation, and we are very on edge, and we are very just ready to pounce on anything that doesn't agree with us. So I'm hoping, and that's a big hope, that we can move away from that. But, you know, I don't know if that's going to happen because of how, you know, the world situation is. It's just a mess, and I don't know any other way to put it. And also, the MacArthur Foundation awarded their grant. Now, if you are ever lucky enough to get this kind of grant, it's a $500,000, they're called genius grants, and there are absolutely no strings attached to this grant, so you can do anything you want with the grant money. But there are 25 recipients. They are nominated, so you can't even apply for it. You're nominated based on the type of work you do, and the committee, you know, then votes on who the recipients will be each year. So that is something that we should all strive for, that we could be considered for a MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant. Well, let's see. I think that's about it for this podcast. I want to thank you for tuning in. Continue to pass it around. Check this out. I'm going to review it and check it out. I'm going to talk about it in a future podcast, but XXL Magazine has a DVD out, and I'm going to listen to some of the hip-hop artists and kind of get a feel for what they're talking about, and then I'm going to share that with you, and we'll talk about that in future podcasts. Well, you take care. Continue to pass Digital Sister around. Continue to be a listener and a fan. I appreciate it, and if ever you want to give me one of your opinions, give me a call at 206-309-7325, or you can call me. I have a Skype telephone number, 216-220-4162. I would love to hear from you, and let's just keep the dialogue coming. Digital Sister signing out. Have a great week. You can't mess with this song.